John chapter 18, and we're going to be beginning at around about verse 33. As we do, I just need to just do a bit of a census, okay? So hands up if you were born in England or still have like a British passport, any of those sort of options. Hands up. Okay, so those of you, so after the service, please form an orderly queue here to have a go at me, okay? I'm just giving you the heads up that I'll be, available after the service for you to come and give me a hard time. I say that because I'm going to be talking a little bit about the monarchy, and actually it might be a very long line because I'm sure there's bound to be a whole lot of other people who want to join the queue to give me a hard time about what I might say about the monarchy. I am not saying it as some sort of young whippersnapper Republican, okay? I just want us to think about this topic because today is actually the last day of the year. What, I hear you say? Well, for those of you who follow the lectionary, today is the last Sunday of the church year. I know it doesn't match the calendar year and it doesn't even match the financial year, but in the church calendar, in the church year, today is the last day of the year. And it's Christ the King is the topic of it. Christ the King. And some of you would actually know it's the last day because you've got envelopes, haven't you? Offertory envelopes. And today should have been the last one. If you give each week, today should have been the last envelope in the box. And the new ones start next Sunday. And so as we come to technically this last day in the church calendar, Christ the King, it's almost as if it's like the calendar needs to make one last statement. One last exclamation mark. Because you see, over the last year, we have travelled through Advent, Christmas, Easter, Pentecost, and all those other ordinary Sundays, and we've come to this Sunday, and the final point being made, Jesus is King. Exclamation mark, full stop, time to start the next year. That's almost what it's like. And in fact, the readings that we had today pick up that idea of Jesus and kingship. But as we start to look at this idea of Jesus and kingship, I actually just want us to ponder a couple of things as we go along. Firstly, is it possible that we can be a little flippant when we say Jesus is King? Do we understand the implications of Jesus being King? Have we understood kingship? Well, let's have a look at John's reading and see what it has to say to us. John chapter 18, we're sort of picking up the story halfway through, that the context is that Jesus has been arrested at this point and he is before Pilate. So it's just before his crucifixion. Now, we know this story reasonably well. Well, I hope we know the story reasonably well. So I'm not going to focus on all the different elements of the story, but rather what I want to focus on today are the questions and the answers between Pilate and Jesus, because that's actually what the readings are focusing on, the questions and answers. And have a look, verse 33. Pilate went back into the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did the others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it that you have done?" Now, what's going on here is that it's obvious that the religious leaders did indeed prep Pilate as to what they believed Jesus had done wrong. And so Pilate's bringing up this accusation. And you can see that when Pilate says to him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" and Pilate sort of, and Jesus sort of says, "Oh, is that your own idea? Did you come up with that yourself, or did someone whisper in your ear?" Pilate gets a little bit antsy, doesn't he? "Am I a Jew?" Basically, what Pilate is saying, "Do you think I really care anything about this?" is what Pilate is saying. But actually, Pilate does care about one thing in particular. You see, Pilate was the Roman governor of the region. Now, if you know your history well, you'd know that Rome is in control at this point in time. And Pilate is the Roman governor. in charge of the area. And he was known to be incredibly brutal. He had an army behind him to keep the peace, and he was known to be incredibly brutal. You read from other sources, not from the scriptures, but from other historical sources, that it's understood that Pilate was of the lower nobility in Rome. So he's from the lower nobility. So he was a noble, but you know, he wasn't from the upper class of the nobility, which means he's you know, holding on to power was, you know, reasonably tenuous. So in order to keep favour with his masters in Rome, what is it that he does? He does an awfully good job in Israel by being brutal and crushing any form of uprising. The last thing Pilate wants, the thing that Pilate cares about, is not having an uprising so that it looks good on his resume back in Rome. But if you think about it, all the elements for uprising are there, aren't they? All the elements are there. You've got a brutal ruler. You've got a people who have a high opinion of themselves, for instance, the people of God. We are the chosen people of God. And as always, in any sort of crowd, you're always going to have a bunch of zealots, aren't you? You put all those things together into a melting pot, and what are you going to get? An uprising. And there were a number of uprisings during this time and in the years before Jesus. There were a number of uprisings, and they were often quashed. So the question that Pilate is asking Jesus here is quite a loaded question. In fact, he's asking basically the question, are you a king? Not just an uprising, but are you claiming kingship? Now, king was a political title. There hadn't been a king, a proper king in Israel, since Herod the Great. Now, Herod the Great was the one who was in charge when Jesus was born. That's Herod. There hadn't been a proper king since that time. So Pilate is basically saying, are you, Jesus, claiming to be a political king? Because Pilate doesn't want this to get out of hand. But there's another level of kingship going on here besides political king. Jesus, throughout his ministry, speaks and shows that he is the Messiah, the Davidic king. And interestingly, what happens is this whole Davidic kingship and Messiah, they're all connected, aren't they? You remember the promises, we've talked about it often. Remember the promise to King David that one of his ancestors would sit on his throne forever? That's that messianic promise. So the whole idea of the Davidic kingship and the messianic promise, they're all tied up together. And Jesus has been claiming and actually establishing that messianic kingship. Jesus is not just talking about the throwing out of the Romans. He's not talking about that. This messianic kingship that Jesus is speaking of and acting in is actually a tectonic shift. It's God's kingdom coming in all its glory. So when Pilate is asking Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? Technically, it's almost like there are two questions going on here. When Pilate says, are you the king of the Jews? Are you a royal pretender, as it were, wanting to establish some sort of political kingship here in Israel? Well, look at what Jesus' answer is in verse 36. My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place. That is an intriguing answer. It's an intriguing answer. Pilate says to him, are you the king of the Jews? What have you done? And Jesus goes on about a kingdom and servants and not of this place. Basically, what Jesus is saying in this answer is, Pilate, when it comes to the idea of a political king, you have nothing to worry about. That's not what my kingdom's about. Rather, my kingdom's so much bigger. It's quite ironic in some sense, isn't it? Jesus is not wanting to start an uprising, something that Pilate would care about. But the kingdom that Jesus is talking about is a kingdom that is such that not only should Pilate be concerned and not only should the people of Israel be concerned, but you and I need to be concerned about it too. That's the sort of kingdom Jesus is talking about. Jesus is not talking about some political kingship in Israel some 2,000 years ago. He's talking about a kingship that extends over all creation. He's talking about a kingship that goes far beyond just geographical boundaries. He's talking about a kingship that goes far beyond a particular time and place in history. Jesus is talking about a different type of kingship. In fact, let me say this, but listen carefully. Wait till I get to the end. Jesus is not a king. Jesus is the king. He's not a king in just some sort of place limited by time and place and geography. No. Jesus is the king. Have you ever heard the phrase, "You're not from around here, are you?" Hopefully you've never used that phrase, because it's actually a bit of a derogatory phrase, isn't it? You're not from around here. You won't understand us. Your ways are foreign to us. You don't really belong, is what that phrase is all about. It's almost as if Jesus is taking that phrase, "You're not from around here, are you?" and flipping it and saying, "You know what? I'm not from around here. My kingdom is not from around here. The source of my kingdom does not come from people and limited to a time and place. My source of my authority is from another place." What does Jesus say? "But now my kingdom is from another place." What's he talking about? Well, I reckon he's talking about what Psalm 93 is talking about. You know, Psalm 93, we had just a few moments beforehand. It's a great psalm. Let me just read a couple of the verses out for it. Don't worry about looking. Just listen to these words. "The Lord reigns. He's robed in majesty. The Lord is robed in majesty and armed with strength. Indeed, the world is established, firm and secure. Your throne was established long ago. You are from all eternity." The Lord reigns. Who reigns? Kings reign. So the Lord is king. And he has all the telltale signs of being one who reigns, one who is king. He's robed in majesty. He's armed with strength. His throne is established, firm and secure. And in fact, it's that final point about his throne that's the interesting point. You see, he's saying his throne is from all eternity. The source of God's authority to reign as king is because it comes from all eternity. He has no rival. Think about it. It's the very nature of God that means he is king. He is before all things, during all things, and will always be, isn't he? Has been, is, will always be. He's not bound by time. He stands outside time and creation. And therefore, it's by his very nature that he rules. It's his kingdom. That's where Jesus is saying my authority comes from that place, from all eternity. So when Pilate is saying to Jesus, "Oh, are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus can honestly say, "No, I am not the sort of king you're thinking of. One who will, as it were, cause a rebellion and throw out Rome." But if Pilate was to be asking, "Are you the king who reigns? Are you the king, the messianic one? Are you the one robed in all authority? Are you the one who was and is and always be? Are you the one with all power and dominion?" Then the answer would be, yes. But the thing is, as you read this passage, Pilate can't fathom that, can he? In verse 37, he says, "Oh, you are a king then." But again, he can't fathom the type of kingship that Jesus is talking about. Why? Well, one of the reasons is because of who actually stands before him. Think about it. Jesus is standing before him, arrested and beaten. Doesn't look very kingly, does it? in human eyes. And Jesus goes on to testify and say, you know, you are right in saying I'm a king. In fact, it's for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. So Jesus is talking about this truth. He's talking about how God will not be mocked, that God will indeed establish his kingdom. But still, Pilate can't get it. And why is it that Pilate can't get it? Because looking with human eyes, the person who stands before him doesn't look very kingly at all. And as you read on into John chapter 19, it becomes even more obvious, doesn't it? From human eyes, the one who was arrested, the story we know so well, the one who was beaten, the one who was forced to carry his own cross, the one who was stripped naked and nailed to that cross, the one who was hoisted high and left to die. It doesn't look very kingly. And as one final insult, Pilate puts a sign above his head so that in every language so that everyone can understand, and it basically says, this pathetic looking human being claim is the King of the Jews. Pilate had no idea of God's kingship. But to be honest, don't we also have a bit of a warped idea of kingship? Or at the very best, maybe a misguided one? This is where I'm treading on very thin ice for some people. You see, I find some things about the monarchy quite intriguing, and particularly the popularity of the new royals at the moment. Did you find that quite intriguing, especially when, you know, some of them were touring Australia recently? The crowds, the media stories. Even this week, there's another story about how, my understanding, if I remember correctly, the Queen and the Duke... 71st wedding anniversary. That's actually impressive as it is. But the thing we need to remember is it's a constitutional monarchy, isn't it? It's a constitutional monarchy. And without wanting to open up old wounds or get too political, a couple of years ago, during a referendum, we could have ended it, couldn't we? With a vote. The power was in our hands, as it were, to end the constitutional monarchy over Australia. And the power continues to be in our hands. We had an election yesterday, didn't we? We had the right and the opportunity, the privilege, to be able to elect and vote in this country. Democracy and monarchy make, you know, a very interesting bedfellows in our country. And the monarchy, what's really interesting is that the monarchy does not decide our legislation. We do, through voting in particular representatives. The monarchy at best provides examples, and you often hear the narrative. Listen to the narrative that often goes on with the media stories, the examples of what it means to be dutiful and responsibility, connection with the past. And then compare that to countries where there actually is something close to a monarchy, where there is like one person ruling with absolute power. And we see those countries and we think to ourselves, we are so grateful and thankful that we're not like that. So we have this view of the monarchy or kings that should serve as a warning to us to not take those views and place them onto Jesus. And that's the point I want to make. We need to be very careful that we don't take our views of human monarchies or kingships or queens or whatever and then place them over the top of Jesus. You see, Jesus is not some connection with the past. He's not just one who keeps traditions going. Jesus does not just provide a good example of what service and responsibility looks like. Jesus is not limited by health and age, and most importantly of all, Jesus cannot be voted out. Which brings me back to my questions at the start. Is it possible that we can be a little bit flippant when calling Jesus King because we have these other views in our head? Is it possible that we don't fully understand the implications of Jesus being King? Do we understand the call that he has on our life now? Do we understand that when it comes to Jesus, this is not a democracy? We do not get a vote. You see, it can be so easy to hear, Jesus is king, and be almost blasé about it. We can say, yeah, Jesus is the king who was willing to die for us. You know, and at this time of the year, as we head towards Christmas, we can, you know, quite rightly remember that Jesus is the king willing to be born and be found here on earth in human flesh, meek and mild. But they're only part of the story, aren't they? They're only part of the story because, you see, Psalm 93 fills in the rest of the story. The Lord reigns. And why does he reign? Because his kingdom is not of this world. His kingdom is of old. He is not simply a weak baby laid in a feeding trough. Jesus is the one who is, according to Psalm 93, robed in majesty. Jesus is not simply a man dying on a cross. He is, according to Psalm 93, the one whose throne was established of old. He has no rival. So if I can use the vernacular, Jesus, he's not from around here. Why? Because he created here. He has no rival. Pilate makes a very interesting statement. You are a king. Pilate meant as a mocking insult. But boy, his words are prophetic and true, aren't they? So, friends, these are the words we should own. Jesus, you are a king. Actually, that's not true. These are the words we should own. Jesus, you are the king. And in fact, actually, we should add to those words, but done with humility and done with due honour and done as we take the crown off our own head and hand it back to its rightful owner. Jesus, you are my king. Let me pray for us. Gracious Lord, we marvel that you are the Lord who reigns and you are robed in majesty and strength. And yet, in your grace and mercy, you came here, dying and rising again. Lord, your kingdom is not of this world. Your kingdom is far beyond our imagination. Lord, you reign. You are not just a king. You are the king, Lord. And because of your grace, we come before you and we acknowledge, Lord, not only are you the king, you are our king. May it always be to your praise and honour. Amen.